We've been working our way through Luke's gospel, and along the way we have been struck by how Jesus calls his followers to do some difficult things. To love people who hate you. To give away your things to people who need them. To forgive those who hurt you. Those are difficult things, don't you think? It's not how we normally do things. Love the people who hate us. And Jesus says, no, no, don't do things the normal way. If you're my follower, you'll do things my way. And we're thinking, but Jesus, your way is nuts. We are not gardeners, but we have some roses in our garden, and my friend Russ told me I needed to prune them right down. And I said, what, about that much? He said, no, that much. And I said, what? Really? That'll kill them. I'm not going to do that. That's nuts. But I did it. Why? Because I trusted him. And the reason I trusted Russ is I've been to his allotment. I've seen the fruit and the veg and the flowers he grows. Beautiful. Russ knows what he's talking about. If someone tells you to do something, whether you do it or not, all depends on whether you trust them. Which means when it comes to our relationship with Jesus, obedience issues are really trust issues. So friends, what is the area where you're finding it very hard to do what Jesus has been saying to us in these last few weeks from Luke's gospel? Where you're thinking, it's just nuts. The fact that we don't obey him actually shows we don't trust him. And we're thinking, yeah, because why should we trust him? Why should we trust some carpenter from 2,000 years ago? Why should we do what he says? What does he know? And Luke is writing to people who are wobbling. People for whom doing what Jesus says has cost them. And they're getting rejected. And they are thinking, what, put my life in Jesus' hands? Live by what he says? Are you sure? You sure we can trust him? At the end of chapter 6, the sermon is over, and Jesus heads into Capernaum, and it's like Luke keeps the cameras rolling, saying, you're not sure if you can trust him? Not sure if you can do what he says? Watch this soldier. Watch this centurion. See what he sees. We're going to read chapter 7, verses 1 to 17, but focus particularly on the centurion. As we read it, ask yourself, what does he see about Jesus? Sophie's going to come and read for us.
Today's reading is taken from Luke chapter 7, verses 1 to 17, and that's on page 729 of the Church Bibles. When Jesus had finished saying all this in the hearing of the people, he entered Capernaum. There, a centurion's servant, whom his master valued highly, was sick and about to die. The centurion heard of Jesus and sent some elders of the Jews to him, asking him to come and heal his servant. When they came to Jesus, they pleaded earnestly with him, "This man deserves to have you do this, because he loves our nation and has built our synagogue." So Jesus went with them. He was not far from the house when the centurion sent friends to say to him, "Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. That is why I do not even consider myself worthy to come to you. But say the word and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and that one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him. And turning to the crowd following him, he said, "I tell you, I have not found such great faith, even in Israel." Then the men who had been sent returned to the house and found the servant well. Soon afterwards, Jesus went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went along with him. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow, and a large crowd from the town was with her. When the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her, and he said, "Don't cry." Then he went up and touched the coffin, and those carrying it stood still. He said, "Young man, I say to you, get up." The dead man sat up and began to talk, and Jesus gave him back to his mother. They were all filled with awe and praised God. "A great prophet has appeared among us," they said. "God has come to help his people." This news about Jesus spread throughout Judea and the surrounding country.
Thank you very much, Sophie. Normally, in the Gospels, people are amazed by Jesus. But did you see verse 9? When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him. Jesus is amazed at the centurion. When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him, and turning to the crowd following him, he said, "I tell you, I have not found such great faith, even in Israel." Jesus was amazed at this centurion's great faith. He's saying, here is someone who totally gets it. He turns to the crowd. He goes, this is what I'm talking about. This is someone who totally gets it. Luke, he's written this for us. He's saying, this is what I'm talking about. Are you finding it hard to trust Jesus? Look at the centurion. It seems to me that the centurion's first step to faith in Jesus is to lose faith in himself. The centurion was a soldier. A centurion was a soldier who was in charge of a unit of 100 men. You didn't get to be a centurion by sitting at your desk filling in forms. He'd seen action. He'd worked his way up through the ranks. He was recognized as a leader. And the 100 men he was in charge of would not have messed with him. He told them to jump. They asked, how high? But then, verse 2, did you catch that? There, a centurion servant whom his master valued highly was ill and about to die. He's used to giving orders, just says the word and it's done. And here is this servant whom he values highly, whom he cares about, and there's nothing he can say. There's no order he can give that will save him. This is a powerful man who has been confronted by the limits of his power. In the face of death, helpless. So often the way, isn't it? We think we are in control of our lives. We think everything's going to be okay. We can sort things. We can fix things. We can handle it. It's all fine. It's all good. And then someone we love is dying. And it confronts us with the limits of our power. There's nothing we can do. When you look at the people you love, when they're suffering, and you realize there's nothing you can do, where do you turn? The centurion turns to Jesus. We see in verse 3 that he'd heard of Jesus. He'd heard of him. Back in chapter 4, Jesus had been in Capernaum. When he was there, the people in the synagogue, the kind of church building they met in, they were amazed at his teaching. They said he spoke with authority. His words had power they had never seen before. He gave orders, is the phrase used, and people were set free from the grip of evil. He spoke, and people were healed. And since then, news of Jesus had been spreading. Maybe this centurion has heard about the time that Jesus was in a boat and the fishermen had caught nothing. And Jesus just gave a word of command and the nets were bursting full of fish. Maybe he's heard of the time Jesus healed a leper. No one can heal lepers. Maybe he's heard of the time Jesus raised a paralyzed man up from his bed. Maybe he'd heard all that, but he'd never really felt the need to turn to Jesus before. I'm a centurion. I don't need Jesus. I'm fine. And now his servant is dying. And he realizes how powerless he is, and he remembers how powerful Jesus is, and he realizes he does need Jesus after all, desperately. And so he sends some of the elders of the Jews. Do you see? The centurion heard of Jesus and sent some of the Jews to him, asking him to come and heal his servant. I think we are a little bit suspicious of people who turn to Jesus in a crisis. We think, yeah, they're just looking for some kind of a crutch to lean on. But so often it is in the crisis, when we feel helpless, when we are staring death in the face, that's when we wake up. That's when we are shaken out of our delusion, the delusion that we are powerful and that we're fine and that we're in control and we don't need Jesus. It turns out we do, we do. It's striking to me how people very rarely just accept death. We're told, oh, it's just natural. We should just accept it. The fact that we don't, the fact that we rise up against it, the fact that we wish we could do something about it. Well, the Bible story makes sense of that experience. It says death is not how things are meant to be. Death is an intruder. Death is an enemy. And it gets us looking beyond ourselves. We say, is there anything, anyone who can conquer this enemy? Is there anyone who could heal the sick? Anyone who could, what, raise the dead? Is there anyone with power over life and death? Power we don't have. Because we need him. If there is anyone like that, we need him. This is a powerful man who comes to see that he is powerless. And that begins to turn his heart to Jesus. He's also a good man who comes to see that he's unworthy. Do you see verse 4? When they came to Jesus, that's the Jewish leaders whom he'd sent, they pleaded earnestly with him. This man deserves to have you do this because he loves our nation and has built our synagogue. He deserves to have you do this. He loves our nation. He's built our synagogue. They're thinking, look, this guy has done us a favor. So Jesus, you need to help him. You owe it to him. That's how we're brought up to think, isn't it? If you're good, then if there is a God, it'll be okay because he owes us. Jesus agrees to come. But do you see what happens halfway through verse 6? He wasn't far from the house when the centurion sent friends to say to him, Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. That is why I didn't even consider myself worthy to come to you, but say the word, and my servant will be healed. What seems to have happened is a message has got back to the centurion. The message says, it's okay, Jesus is on his way. And the centurion panics. Tell him, no, I don't consider myself worthy for you to come under my roof. And the Jewish elders, they're hearing this and thinking, what? The centurion? This big guy who lives in a big house and he sends a message to this carpenter from Nazareth who is a rough sleeper. And the message is, I am not worthy to have you come under my roof. What? And the Jewish elders, they're thinking of some of the other centurions they could care to mention who have looked down on the Jewish nation, who have given them a hard time. This guy was different. He loved their nation. He helped them build the synagogue. He ran half a marathon, got sponsorship and everything. Surely, if ever there was a guy who deserves to have his prayer answered, it's this one, isn't it? He deserves it. But you see, the centurion sees the truth. Remember Peter in the boat with Jesus? Jesus gives the word and the nets are full to bursting. And do you remember Peter's response? Go away from me. I'm a sinful man. I take it the centurion sees what Peter saw. See, compared with some centurions in the Roman army, he's probably not too shabby. But you stand before Jesus, you realize you're not worthy. Maybe he's thinking of the kind of life that Jesus calls his followers to love your enemies, to keep on giving so you go without, to forgive those who hurt you. And he's thinking, that's not me. That's not me. Maybe he's thinking about the sort of power and authority Jesus has, and he's thinking, well, I may be a big man with a big house, but actually before Jesus, I am very small. And Luke wants us to see what the centurion saw. Because what we do is we compare ourselves with other people, makes us think we're not too shabby. And if there is a God, there's nothing to worry about. I mean, we're not perfect, we're not saying that, but we're better than some people we could care to mention. But you see what the centurion sees? He sees the issue is not where you stand in relation to everyone else, but where you stand in relation to Jesus. The Jesus who is coming. The Jesus whom we will have to face is the one who calls us to love the people who hate us, to give away our stuff so that we go without, to forgive those who hurt us. The Jesus who is coming, the Jesus whom we'll have to stand before, is the one with power and authority over life and death. And we think we are big, but you see, what happens is you start to see Jesus and you realize you're quite small and you're not worthy of him. You see, his first step to faith in Jesus is to lose faith in himself. For as long as you think you are powerful, you will think, I don't need Jesus. I'm in control of my life. And for as long as you think you are good, you will think, I don't need Jesus. I've been good. God owes me. But this centurion loses all faith in himself. He sees that he's small. Smaller than he ever realized, and he sees Jesus is big, bigger than he ever knew. And he turns to Jesus. He says, I'm powerless, he's powerful. I'm not worthy, but he is one who seems to reach out to people who are not worthy. And so the message he sends is, just say the word and my servant will be healed. See? No confidence in himself, total confidence in Jesus. Just say the word. And you see how he explains himself in verse 8, how he came to this conclusion. Do you see what he says? For I myself am a man under authority with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes. This one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it. I myself am a man under authority, he says. I have been given authority by the emperor. And that means I have power over the soldiers that are under me. I say go and they go. I say come and they come. In the world of my 100 men, I am king. I'm king over them. I have some very lame visual aids. Okay, so there is his unit of 100. What? No, wrong visual aid. There is his units of 100 men. And in that little world, this centurion is king. Okay, he is king over his 100 men. Yeah, that's what he gets. And then he's looking at Jesus and saying, but you have been given authority way greater than mine. I can tell 100 soldiers what to do. I say go and they go. I say come and they come. But you can tell the fish what to do. You can tell storms what to do. Evil spirits obey you. You say a word and all kinds of men and women drop everything and follow you. You speak and the sick are healed. Luke shows us in the next bit is Jesus speaks and the dead are raised. And the centurion is going, look, I am king over 100 men, but you, what sort of king are you? You are king over everything, the whole world. He's saying, that's why I'm totally confident. You can just say the word and my servant will be healed. I'm totally confident. You can just say go and the illness will go. And Jesus is amazed. This is great faith. And he wants the crowds around him to clock it, to learn from it. And he wants us to learn from it. So here is the thing. If this is great faith, what is faith? It's when you trust Jesus because you see that he's king. It's when you trust Jesus because you see that he is king. We're often told, aren't we, that faith is blind. It's a leap in the dark that flies in the face of all the evidence. Do you notice the centurion? He's not leapt in the dark. Why does he trust Jesus? Because he sees he's king. But why does he see he's king? Because he's been piecing together all the things that Jesus has done. He looks at it and he goes, what is it? What does it all point to? And that's what Luke wants us to do as we read his gospel. We're wobbling and we're not sure if we can trust Jesus because we're not sure if he is the king really over everything. And Luke starts his gospel by saying he's made careful investigation. He's got eyewitness accounts. He's pieced them together. The things Jesus said, the things Jesus did. And he's saying, look at the evidence. Where does it all point to? If we're going to read the evidence right, we need to back off a little bit. And you need to know that back in the Old Testament, God said one day he would send his king into the world. The world was made good. It was not a place of death, sickness. But the world is now broken. And on this day of all days, we know that. We know we live in a world that's been torn apart by war. But there was this promise of this king who was going to come and fix this broken world. He was going to make all things new. There were going to be no more wars. There was going to be everlasting peace. And the prophet said, you'd be able to spot this king because he would have power no one else had. He would have power to fix this broken world and mend broken lives. So you'd spot him because he'd go around healing the sick and setting people free from the grip of evil. And the lame would walk, and the blind would have their eyes open, and the deaf would hear. He'd even raise people from the dead. That's the kind of power he would have. And Luke is recording what Jesus did and what Jesus said, and Luke is saying, do you see what it points to? Here is a man healing the sick. Here is a man opening the eyes of the blind. Here is a man setting people free. Here is a man mending broken lives. Why? Because of who he is. He's the king. He's come. Fix this broken world. Really? See, we look around and we say, the world's not fixed. Well, it's not fixed because he's not finished. But the signs, you see, what he did, you see, point to the fact that Jesus is the king with power to do what no one else can do. He has come. He has started to put broken lives back together again. One day he'll finish what he started. One day he will put the whole world back together again, but he's not yet finished. When he's finished, it'll all be fixed. If it's not yet all fixed, it's because he's not yet finished. So maybe you're sitting there and you're kind of hoping that somehow you'll get faith. It will just click. Well, it's true. You will need God by his Spirit to open your eyes. But how he does it is through his word. I trusted Russ because I spent time in his allotment. I saw the evidence. You want to trust Jesus? Spend time in Luke's gospel. Look at the things you see about him. What does it point to? Maybe you say, well, I'm just not the faith in Jesus type. You know, the centurion was not the faith in Jesus type. He was not. Jesus says, do you see in verse 9, I've not found such great faith even in Israel. Israel, they are the faith in Jesus type. At least they were supposed to be, but they didn't get it. This centurion gets it. See, it's not about being a certain type. Jesus is not a kind of spiritual therapy that works for some people who are into that sort of thing. He is, sorry about this, king over the whole world. And if you are in this world, if you're on this planet, he is your king. Do you see? The centurion gets it, not because he's the type. It's because he's confronted by the truth. This is how things are. This is reality. The world has a king. And his name is Jesus. And Jesus is saying to the crowd, will you face reality? He's saying to us, will you face reality? Put your faith in him. Trust him because he is the king. The truth is, we do all of us have faith, and we all put our faith in someone, don't we? The question to think through is, who are you banking on to sort things out? It might be you're banking on yourself. You're thinking, things are going to be okay, because I've got this, you know. Maybe it's someone else, maybe it's your boss. You think, well, my boss will see me right. I'll keep him with my boss, and that'll get me the promotion, and that'll sort things out. Maybe it's your boyfriend or your girlfriend. You think that they're the person who makes me happy. They'll see me right. Or your family who look after you, or friends who help you get by. Well, what you're exercising is faith. You're trusting in them. You're banking on them to sort things out. And that might be okay in a way for a while, but are they big enough when things get serious? I mean, really serious. When people you love get sick. When you face your death. Have they got the power to command the sickness to go? To raise you from the dead? See, there are people in our lives who can sort out some of the things. But Jesus, we trust for everything. He's the king who will sort everything out. See, if you are in this centurion's unit, if you're within that unit of 100 men, if anything comes up in unit life, I don't know whether unit's quite the right word, who is in command? The centurion. You turn to him, yeah? Within this world, if anything comes up in this world, anything in this world, who is in command? Jesus. You turn to him. You turn to him. Anything. Because he's king over everything. I need to say, these verses, you know, are not a promise that if we're sick, he will always heal us. In the Gospels, he doesn't heal everyone. What he is doing is showing everyone that he is the king with power no one else has. The king with power to sort everything out. And the miracles you get in the Gospels are little foretastes of the future. In the meantime, he calls us to trust him. Whatever comes up in this world, he is in command. It's in his hands. Maybe you're worried about the election result in the U.S. You're worried about the way the political landscape across the world seems to be polarizing into a kind of us versus them mentality. It's in his hands. You just heard the news about the earthquake in New Zealand. It's in his hands. Maybe for you there's uncertainty at work. You don't know what the future holds. It's in his hands. Maybe you're facing sickness. It's all under his command. It's in his hands. Maybe you're a student here. You're thinking about next week. Next week the Christian Union are having a week of events proclaiming the good news of Jesus. And perhaps you're fearful. You're thinking, how is everyone going to respond? How is anyone going to come? What are your friends going to make of it? What are they going to make of you? It's in his hands. Maybe you're just thinking about someone you love very much who is not a believer and you worry for them. They're in his hands. Because maybe you think, well, if he is in command, if it is all in his hands, why are things so broken? We don't know all the answers. What we know is he is the king. He's shown us that. And he is working out his plans. And he does have the power that no one else has to sort everything out. And one day he will. So think back to that area that you were finding really hard to do what he says. Seeing who he is, does that help? You say, wow, what does he know? Why listen to Jesus? Does it help to see? He's not just a carpenter. He's king. He's totally in charge. The soldiers, anything in their unit crops up. The centurion is in command. They do what he says. Yeah? Anything crops up in your life, Jesus is in command. You do what he says. Perhaps you're thinking of a relationship that's really hard. And he says, you've got to go on loving them. And you're thinking, really? Or you're thinking of what he says about giving stuff away. And you're thinking, really? Trust him. This relationship is in his command. When he tells you to go on loving, he knows what he's doing. He's in charge. Your finances, they're in his command. When he tells you to keep being generous, he knows what he's doing. Of course, we worry, don't we? If we do what he says, we think it'll spoil things. Put my life in his hands? I'm going to miss out. It's going to be a disaster. Remember what this king has come to do. With his power, what is he doing? Spoiling things? No. Fixing things. If you're a soldier, you put your life in the hands of your centurion. You trust him, and you hope he will lead you to glory. If you put your life in the hands of this king, he will lead you to glory. His hands. Good hands to be in. The big hands. The good hands. Last year, I pruned the roses. This year, they took off. They're beautiful. Of course, Russ knew what he was doing. I was glad I trusted him. I was glad I did what he said. Friends, when the king comes to finish what he has begun, we will be glad we trusted him. We will be glad we did what he said. Because it will be beautiful. It will. Let's pray. I tell you, I have not found such great faith even in Israel. Lord Jesus, we pray, please open our eyes to see what the centurion saw, that we would put our faith in you, that we would put our trust in you, because we'd know that you are the king. And there's no one bigger, and there's no one better. And we pray that we would know that in your hands is the only place to be. And pray that for the honor of your name. Amen.